morning. Today I would like to discuss dilemmas, diagnosis, and self destigmatization of parents' perspective on child's autism diagnosis by Weston and Norwood. Yeah, so autism is a neurodevelopmental disorder that affects your social interaction, your social communication skills, and includes repetitive behaviors. And autism is a spectrum, so a child might not have all three areas impaired, which in that case would be classical autism, but have social interaction and repetitive behaviors, would that lead to Asperger's syndrome, or have social interaction and social communication issues, and that would be pervasive developmental disorder. Currently, according to World Health Organization, there is 1% prevalence of autism worldwide. However, it's based on estimations on Western cultures, and a clear number is still not defined.
One thing, autism or ASD?
ASD, sorry, autism spectrum disorder, ASD. Okay, so the paper presented with current dilemmas for people with ASD and their families. First of all, is the obstruction of getting resources and help by parents, because parents do not want to get the diagnosis. We have something here in front. So in that case, the child doesn't get diagnosed because parents doesn't want to label a child. On another hand, there is a clinician's decision not to give a diagnosis because there is no resources or help that the parents could access, even though there will be a label given to a child. Another thing that also clinicians face is the biological and social factors of the disorder. So biological, it's clear that it's a effect of genes and neurological pathways. Of course, the clear ones are still debatable. And it's clear that it is based on genes and neurological development issues. However, there is a sociological factor which is based on the way society defines what is abnormal and what is normal, and what they stigmatize and not stigmatize. And the people from sociological factors says, what's the point of giving a label when the society is not ready for that label to be assist and actually provide help and care for that person? And that would actually hinder that person's development more than it would help. And the third factor is stigma that family faces. It doesn't only change the life of the person, it changes the whole life of the family, in the sense how they are viewed by the society and how they are judged or not judged on specific things they do or they don't. So the current study looked at 8 parents who have not diagnosed their children, who are resisting for not diagnosing their children, and 9 parents who had diagnosed their children. They used the same structured interview, so qualitative study, 15 mothers, 2 fathers, children age range from 15 to 16 years, 13 boys and 4 girls, and they used thematic analysis to analyze the data. Is all the ways and methods clear for everyone? Yeah. So the main results of the study is that for both parents, diagnosed and not diagnosed children, the first impact of possibility of diagnosis, even when they were approached by professional where someone were telling them, were quite mixed, in the sense they had intuition that something wrong with the child. However, they didn't want that to be confirmed. They kind of wanted to be denied by the professionals who approached them. So despite if they resisted or not resisted, they both had this sort of a mixed feeling towards the diagnosis when they heard first time about it. So, and then there was quite a distinct thinking from the parents who have children who are not diagnosed. So first of all was the fear of a loss of a normal child status, in the sense that the child, when he gets a label, he's not normal anymore, and that label kind of stands out in that sense, and it's based on the labeling theory, in the sense that if you give a label, that child will definitely have those features and will show those features, even if, if, for example, you might not give that label and child will never show those characteristics. So, and another one is parental denial, which is based on the child characteristics and the society's perception. So when Satiety's perception and stigma is higher fear for the parent than the child's characteristics, than the parent is in denial and doesn't want to put the label, because the characteristics and problems the child has does not overcome their fear of stigma they have. However, on the other hand, the parents who had diagnosed their children come to terms with diagnosis. And the positive thing is that they know what source of a disorder it is and what they're dealing with. And they have resources and they have understanding of it. They kind of start seeing child in a positive light, that he is not normal, but he is also valuable and different in that sense. And I really liked the diagram that they put it, showing how the balance is tilted one way or another. On one hand, when we were talking about the undiagnosed child parents, there is stigma, there is stability, and defending constantly their normal child status. On the other hand, parents who have diagnosed their child, there is resources, resolution, and professional advice. And another thing they noticed that it kind of went under the ASD diagnosis positive and benefits part is that the parents become the advocates of ASD, and they try to increase visibility and promote that around their people and represent them in more positive light and recruit people to talk about ASD. And also those parents can become the ways and teachers to guide those who doesn't want their children to be diagnosed. So that's also kind of a way, a help for clinicians to use the parents who are with a diagnosed ASD child to help those who are resisting this sort of a thing. So before I move to the questions, because I wanted to kind of have your opinion on what you thought about the article, so I don't know, maybe you have some questions, thoughts, comments, before we move to discussion and questions I have for you.
Did you think it was an issue that all of the children with a diagnosis, and probably with not a diagnosis, mm-hmm. were all high functioning, and that it wasn't really looking at the spectrum?
Yeah.
But which is common within most studies.
Yes.
But
because you kind of have to choose one part of the spectrum, because the spectrum is quite large and their characteristics vary, and I think it's way easier, in my opinion, to get parents who are with high-functioning autistic children to participate than the ones with low-functioning autistic children, in the sense that they have less time on their hands when they have a lower-functioning autistic child.
I guess the question is, what issues could it raise about managing those groups? If the issue is stigma, all the differences in stigmatization between higher and lower functioning.
Yeah, that's also.
What do you think?
Well, I think autism in the sense is not a visible disorder, so the child might look perfectly normal, especially the high functioning ones. So that's why I think for high functioning parents it's way harder influence to get stigmatized, because it's not visible and child looks normal, and then suddenly a child throws a tantrum and, you know, why you're not parenting your child well, why he is misbehaving, and so on and so forth. When the child is with low functioning autism, he tends to have some repetitive behaviors. It tends to be more visible, I think, in that sense. Parents tend to see that, or other people tend to notice that something's wrong with the child, and then it's less, I think, judgmental, more like pitying, in my opinion, like, oh, poor you, in that sense.
I thought it was interesting, it seems a bit mixed to read the paper, whether they consider the two groups of parents as different. In terms of, like, they've taken this strategy and the other group has taken the other strategy, or whether there's sort of a transition.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was described both ways at different points in the paper. It's interesting because it's not really clear any of the either of the groups, like there's a delay between somebody suggesting you think your child might be on the autistic spectrum and then getting a diagnosis. I think it's just not very clear whether the people who've not had a diagnosis yet are just kind of earlier on in that process.
Yeah,
that's
That was kind of in a couple of places that they were like talking about the mothers who are getting more convinced through this interview that they should get the diagnosis, and they are kind of on the tip of going to another side in that sense. I think there's always a transition, but it's always interesting how that transition happens, and I think they were not capturing that. They were trying to define two groups, what are the factors that parents resist versus those factors that one parents accepted in that sense. I think you are quite right on that part.
One thing that I was interested in because it relates to that issue is I couldn't establish what exactly might have told the parents who were not, who they describe as not pursuing a diagnosis, about what this was, study was about. Because I think it's kind of relevant as to what sort of data they were trying to.
I think they were referring that.
They do acknowledge in the paper that the fact that the people who are not pursuing diagnosis are obviously a very different sample. Because if you don't want a diagnosis, you're not going to do a study like this, so that you're already biasing. Although there is really an alternative, but they do acknowledge that's a big limitation in this study.
I mean, very difficult study, so it's not a crystal, but it's what you say to people.
Yes.
Because it isn't clear what you actually said, what they explained to people. Maybe I haven't read carefully enough. On what the study was about. You want to know all these things, but you, what do you actually say to people about what the study is? Because that would make a difference as to what they said.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they're recruited by a healthcare professional saying that they're worried about this child. So I'm interested how they got that. They don't say whether they put an advert or, there's hardly any info on that. And is that all right that you get an educational psychologist has identified them?
Well, I think that's probably okay, but I think the question is, what you recruit them to the study, what are you telling them? I mean, it's not easy, very difficult, because I think the brave study to do it is very complicated. Because influence is what they're going to say. Now, I don't have any simple answers to how you can deal with it.
Yeah, it doesn't say what they said. It just said that they used them. Health professionals and education professionals.
Oh, maybe they just.
And then I guess, It's speculation, I assume. That's
sure.
To guess what they said, So, I don't know. So I won't pretend to know.
Could you go to somebody's house? I want to interview you about X.
Well, sometimes they do the studies when they don't say the actual purpose. It's
sure.
A blind study. So they might say some sort of, I don't know, we are interviewing on the behalf of school and parenting. I don't know, whatever. And then at the end of the interview, they actually said what they were interviewing about.
If you look at the interview schedule at the back, one of the questions are, why diagnose, why not diagnose? So they obviously had to, the rest are very generic. Do you know what I mean? Like, tell us your story. So they would have, I think they would have had to have known what they were going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're quite generic questions, aren't they, that could be for any neurodevelopmental disorder, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So I had some questions prepared also from my perspective. So do you, because that's what we encounter back home in Lithuania as a clinicians and professionals, is do you say and put the label when there are no resources and support from the government for the child to have the early interventions, and it's purely on the parents' financial capabilities and abilities to provide, or like how do you tackle this biological versus social factors, and what would be your opinions and ideas on it? Because it's quite clear when there are resources and when there are possibilities and to help that child in early interventions and so on and so forth, that's encouraged by clinicians, but the clinicians back home encounter the problem that when you give a diagnosis, you kind of give the parent and send him into the wilderness because there is no help or assistance provided. And the society is definitely not ready to understand the disorder. So I was thinking, what would be your thoughts on it?
Actually, they're really good questions.
Yeah. And another thing is, like, if there is a possibility and resources for it, should actually diagnosis be on the parents' hands, or should be just given by clinicians to decide and professionals say, well, that's the thing, and you need to accept that as that, I don't know, medical diagnosis of whatever disorder. And yeah.
What, okay, should we start with, I think that the issue, biggest issue is the issue which is raising out, as you say, is do you give the diagnosis, do you actually label them? And what are the benefits and problems of labeling a child with, especially if there is no
Well, are there any benefits? Is there nothing?
Exactly.
Other than raising awareness, which I think is what we talk about a lot, isn't it? It's a vicious circle that if you don't, and which that last diagram showed, if you don't diagnose, then, so they're basically saying, which I think is true, the more people that are diagnosed, increases awareness, reduces stigma, so therefore more people are diagnosed. So does there have to be a threshold in a society where there has
and
no resources? Yeah, because something's got to drive that. So in that sense, I think it is good. But then what happens to those families, which doesn't make any difference, and this is a long, long process, and it'll take years for anything to change.
Mm. But it's quite tied to, I think, to whether, and other people think, to your first question as to whether you help family see it as something biological or social psychological, sort of.
Because you can try to explain, like from a clinical point of view, you can explain what it is, the person can know that, but the typical question is like, so what? So what did I know my child has this and this and this problem? But if I, but if I cannot help, or there is no available therapies or interventions, and then it kind of raises an ethical dilemma in the sense like, yes, you provided with biological aspects of it, but the society is not ready for it, government is not ready for it, and then it's kind of a question of the financial abilities of the parents, which is very unfair for those who don't have those abilities.
What do people think? We're talking about whether or not...
Maybe for some of them it's helpful just know that the label is why a child behaves like this.
Mm-hmm.
You have something different, but I don't know. It's a really complicated question.
Yeah.
For some of them.
Yeah. In the same way that the parents would feel more comfortable saying to other, strangers, oh, my child has autism spectrum disorder or Asperger's, and make it easier. It might be possible that in the home, it's easier to, provide more consistent parenting if you can attribute it to something else. But Lithuania is like it's a high income country, right? So access to information should be more available than comparing it to a low income country. And there must be strategies in the home that a parent can do without a lot of resources.
Well, the problem is that yes, you know what autism is, but you also, like, internet has its, like, you know, very good grounds of providing help, resources, and, so and other things. But also, internet is a place where you can find very unhelpful methods how to raise a child. Like, now, dolphin therapies is the, one thing now Lithuania is aiming for, which is quite dolphin therapy for, that dolphins, yes. Or massage, or like alternative medicine, or that sorts of things. Because another problem with clinicians back home is that they are very medically oriented. So all they see how they can help such a child is provides drugs.
Okay.
And parents don't want their children to be drugged. You know, and yes, we are, compared to other countries, quite a high income country, but I think our society is still way back in socialism and so at times in the way they see mental health and how our government sees mental health. Like now, they are closing the hospital that provides diagnosis for children because they need money for cardio or cancer research. So...
Sorry, I'm late.
No, it's okay.
I mean, I'm sure that things are hopefully a little bit better in the UK and that there are other agencies that you can get help from. But certainly, I've worked in many CAMS teams where the role of the CAMS team is to say, yes, this child has autism. There isn't anything after that. So I think it is a useful thing for a parent to know because often. You know, they're just worried about what it is that might be wrong with their child, and it's helpful to have an explanation of that. And it's not really great that that's what happens so much in the UK as well, but it is. If you have another problem as well as autism, you might be able to get help with that, but just being having a diagnosis of autism doesn't get you anything. You just carry on. So that's been your experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it opens some doors in terms of education, but much less so for as a girl.
It's probably very individualised, and that's the judgment of the clinician, which is so difficult. And I always remember a family of an adolescent girl who was high functioning, saying how she felt the most helpful thing. She was actually diagnosed by Asperger's, I'm not sure we agreed with Asperger, but she had ASD of some form. And she said it was the most helpful thing because she knew she was different to everybody else, and everybody knew she was different. And she could, it helped her to understand and give her a reason, not try so hard to be like everybody else. And the parents felt that the biological explanation for this took the pressure on them to try and make her, encourage her under all circumstances to be social and to kept on trying to go over things with her as to why she wasn't responding the way other kids did and why she landed up in isolation, whereas this helped them. I don't think they were offered that much treatment. There wasn't much treatment for it, but it was just. But it is the problem with CAMS. But on the other hand, there are many people who find the label is just, very, very tough.
But given the process of diet for kind of proper diagnosis takes quite a long time, I would, with those ones where it's not really clear cut and you're not sure whether they think it would be helpful to have a label or not, then you can have a big discussion with them about whether they want to go through the process of getting or not getting a label, or just leave it and carry on as they are, and let people make different decisions in that.
Yes.
I think it was interesting, this paper though, we can discuss whether that's right or not, that actually a diagnosis for the parents that did have one, it actually empowered them, and that they really focused, like it says here, on the neurological differences on the brain, and that actually those differences brought strengths and benefits. So actually, is that person would be an advantage for me if I was a parent, a parent of an ASD child, that actually it all then fitted into place, and I felt that, I think we touched on that it's not their fault, and the behaviour isn't a tantrum because your parenting is poor. It's their brain's different, and actually once you do that, which I think one woman does a really nice quote and says, everyone's autistic, which, and I look at people and I go, they're on the spectrum, and I think that's really nice from, the way they talk about it here is nice for a parent, whether that obviously doesn't bring the child into it, but for a young child, then maybe that does make a huge difference over the lifetime. Whereas if you're 22, it's not going to empower your parent, or might do, I don't know. So that's one advantage, I think, of diagnosis.
And lots of adults in the last few years seeking diagnosis as adults, actually, and families often see a lot of benefit in having a diagnosis, even I've been involved in a few assessments of adults in their 50s and 60s where the family has known for decades, you know, that there was something different, but and often find it a huge relief to finally have a diagnosis and an explanation. It's interesting.
And a lot, as you're all saying, is down to the sense that now people are more clear that the cause of things, or cause of issues, are not social, which we're talking about the social side, but the psychological idea of parenting, parents being the problem, makes an enormous difference.
And actually, talking to a lot of charities and stuff locally, or the community in Oxford, they all really like the brains. Like, because I've been talking a lot about the brain bank over at the JR, and actually, whereas you'd think maybe parents would find it a bit hard to talk about it, they actually really like it, because again, it's that biological, oh yeah, our brains, my child's brain is different, but in a really good way. It's not, you know, and again, that brings in the whole social stuff, like, you know, how society regard, should we all be like we are sitting in this room, or actually is it, you know, autistic people just have a different way of sitting in this room. So that does bring into that, but I just think the brain side of it, people really like. And I think that's helped a lot.
Yeah, I think because biological aspect is more objective. You don't, there is no opinion about it. It's either this or that. With sociological factors, lots of opinions about it. You know, and society is full of opinionated people. So I think, yes, when you take that pure biological factor, it's way clearer in that sense than when you have the sociological factor in it too. So,
but just in your third point about parents who say nursing doctors should be the professionals only, and it's, I guess it's, I was trying to be interested in what you, I sort of know, but what you meant by it, because
well,
is it that you,
so what I meant by this question is like, you know, you go to the clinician, and clinician says your child has, I don't know, whatever disease or disorder that child has, that it's, well, let's be mean and say cancer, right? Does the parent fight and say, no, he doesn't have a cancer, and I don't want to deal with this, and so on and so forth, you know? Or does that, like, what I meant is, like, is it if a clinician says so, the parent doesn't boycott and like kind of refuse the label and, you know, in that sense accept it and try to understand the disorder, or we just leave that kind of, when I introduce the point of the restrictions and barriers that the ASD person has with the person, with the parents, with not getting the resources and intervention and so forth, because the parents don't want to admit the label in that sense. That's my thinking behind the question.
So in a sense, you, it's about saying to parents, because I guess you can't, they can't say no unless they know what you're trying to offer them, saying we do think this is what it is, but we can go down later and we can just try and talk about what feels, what the behaviour is. It's really kind of a labelling rather than going labelling.
Yeah.
That's very, and I suppose especially in the context of whether or not there are treatments available, help available. I mean, I think the internet's a very interesting issue here. That's the point you raise, because if you go to autism, the help on the internet, you can offer you anything under the sun.
And I think that's another excuse for the government, Leave That Home, is that one parents' association will go and say, I want ABA, an intervention, which is a behavioral intervention, a very tough one, and it's very behavioristic approach on it. And it works very much for children who are like young, like till they are teenagers, because that's kind of reciprocal. You do this, then we move step forward to that. So some parents would love to be very pro this and would want government to run a support for it. However, other parents would be into this sort of a Sunrise program, which works on parents getting resources and support and working on their children on their basis, on a regular basis, daily basis, with some sort of interventions and things like bonding and so on and so forth. The third group of parents would be like, no, we need to go to the schools and we need to teach teachers how to deal with that child and integrate those children in schools. And then the government is like, well, choose what you want. And they're like, well, we will not give you any of it because you want this, this, and that. You know, so you, the parents are divided, which I think is another very big problem, because if there is no clear objective intervention, the parents are like divided in what they want and don't want or what they agree or disagree on it. And then the government kind of abuses that in the sense that like, well, you don't know yourselves what you want or what you need, so we won't give you anything.
So
that's
a solution.
You
need research to design.
Yeah.
Need to render. Because you're talking about public health perspective, not better for most of them.
But I think another thing in general with interventions and ASD is that there are thousands of interventions and different aspects of it, and in highly developed countries they do not agree which intervention to use with children. And I think that's why it's really hard to kind of point parents to the right direction. As a clinician especially, like, parents will come and say, so which way I should go, what should I use? And then some interventions will have high scientific proofs of it, and some will not, and some will be very expensive and some will not, and because there is no clear public health standard, what works and doesn't work, it's very complicated in that sense.
So. Well, there is some evidence that some things do work.
Yeah, and I think because autistic children are on the spectrum, they all are very individual in their own cases. And that's why it's very hard to have like an intervention that will work for everyone.
And the outcomes are so different. Because a tiny difference for someone that's nonverbal is very hard to quantify. With someone who's high functioning. Although you would split them even so, there is that massive group in the middle. Which is why interventions are so difficult in any country.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that that is also perhaps an additional issue that I've got to this, that some interventions require an enormous amount of the parents, and that is an important issue to always consider, that because they've got other children, it's not say you shouldn't do it, but there's an important consideration.
Yes.
What. And now, have you been through any of these intensive interventions with autistic family experience, low as well, which is the one that and given how hard it is day by day for the families and how little progress is often made and how much support and encouragement they need to keep going, is that big decisions to make to embark. And I think Lovis would say those kinds of issues, like the AK model, they're the kinds that you don't take on lightly. One of the big things is that adherence is very important. So I think interesting to this issue about whether or not you take the diagnosis or not.
Yes, because another thing that comes when you don't take diagnosis early is that your interventions will not have such a high impact if the child is diagnosed when he's 8, versus when the child is diagnosed when he's 3, and the interventions are started in early ages. Then the impact is way, way harder than what higher than when the child is diagnosed later in life. And what I mean, parents, some of them are really regretting for not accepting diagnosis early on. And they find out like one child is 3 or 4 and they go and they kind of get the diagnosis, official diagnosis, the child is autistic, but they don't do anything with that. And they would just have that label and they would not look for any interventions. They would kind of have a think like, oh, he will grow out of it. I don't know why, but some parents do that. And then when the child gets older and has to go to kindergarten and preschool and so on and so forth, then they realize that they should do something because their child is struggling and it's hard on the whole family to see that struggle. And then they later on in life, when child grows and becomes a teenager, they say, well, if we had done that earlier, that I assume that would be a way higher effect of the intervention that we are using. So that's my kind of wish, to look at the parents back home and see how they perceive the diagnosis and what are their thoughts, those who are already raising older children versus those who are just starting to get into contact with the diagnosis, and somehow have this sort of a model of showing and helping those parents who already have later in life child with the ASD, and kind of have those groups talk together with those who have early diagnosis and kind of looking for intervention themselves. So sort of the communication between those two.
In Romania. A lot of work done there.
I think it's pretty similar to Lithuania as well, and yeah, the stigma is just very strong, and I think as well parents do not accept it most times, just because they don't want people to know or to perceive their child as disabled in any kind of way. So I'm not very familiar with the procedures and how they diagnose them at the moment, but I know that in general, with any kind of diagnosis, mental health related diagnosis, it's just kind of this isolation of the children as well.
Even now,
and there's not so many, only I think, for example, I'm from a small town in Romania, I don't know of any, maybe there's one school for children with special needs, but yeah, I'm sure in bigger cities, but yeah, that's kind of it. So the society doesn't really provide much for them to help them accept the diagnosis easier. So it's quite similar.
Are there parents groups in this way?
Yes, so there are three parents groups. So that's how it shows the division between the parents and how hard it is to work with each one of them. Because one parent group would be very much on, as I mentioned, this Sunrise program of like working parent with the child and working on or artsy stuff, dolphin therapy, all that sort of thing. That would be one parent group. Then another parent group would be like very behavior approach, like ABA, going to that sort of treatment and intervention. Then another would be like pushing towards the government and education and working on the special needs schools. Because another problem with special needs schools is that people don't know how to work with autistic child. They have no clue. Some teachers I met, they have even wrong understanding what autism is. So other parent group is trying to push on that sort of like providing education and teaching strategies for teachers in schools, because they think when you put the child in special needs schools, a special autistic child, he kind of, I don't know what's the word, degrades or whatever, like just gets worse, deteriorates more than actually gets help and uplifts, because the autistic children very much need to learn social boundaries and behaviors with the children who kind of learn together those boundaries through the years. And the problem is that when you put them with other children who has disabilities, they kind of don't have this kick of learning all those boundaries in that sense. So integration, like another problem with Romania is that we have such a good loss, like so much tolerance towards mental health, like very well written things and other than that, but practice is very far away from it, which is really really, really difficult.
Any other thoughts about this paper? And what did you think was a brave thing to, you know, not that common to find good qualitative work around these sorts of issues in diplomacy? Very important.
Well, I think it's a mixed, kind of a mixed method, I think is the way to go. Well, at least I'm going for that one. In the sense that you have questionnaires that would show psychological well-being and so on and so forth, but you also need interviews with the hands to get a deeper knowledge and understanding of it, and then comparing those in that sense. So, yeah, I think mixed method is how we can capture better than having either just qualitative, and which is way harder to generalize, or having just very generalized thoughts without the deeper.
I mean, I suppose we I always think of, you know, Oxford is the home of the Tinbergens. Has anybody ever read any work, know about the work? The Tinbergens, it's just worth, Nigger Tinbergen was the ethologist who won the Nobel Prize for biology. Before his ethology, he's not been working in ethology. Towards the end of his career, it turned out that he had a child or a grandchild with autism. It was he and his wife who wrote the original, really got going with the idea of the refrigerator parent. And they termed it, they gave a term, and a lot of the original work, because they'd won the Nobel Prize, it's not your recording. Because, I mean, a lot of the work had carried enormous what took so many years to undo. Describing this was the parent that it was the mother. It's just interesting.